Oh, snap.
The world is finally waking up to the crap that's baked into and sprayed on kibble dog food. No longer can commercial pet food manufacturers fool us with pretty pictures and false promises. This is the raw dog food truth. The view and opinions expressed on this podcast are not intended to replace medical advice. Before starting any raw diet, do research, ask lots of questions, and consult your vet.
All right. Thank you for joining the Raw Dog Food Truth. I am Dee Dee Mercer Moffat, your host, and the fabulous Judy Jasek, J-A-S-E-K, is with us today. That's Dr. Judy Jasek, holistic vet, cancer treatment vet, my favorite, cancer prevention vet, right, Dr. Jasek? Because what we do here at Raw Dog Food and Company is the basis of health. You got to get your diet right first, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. And I want to be preventing cancer. I'd much rather not be treating it. I'd rather have my practice turn into cancer prevention than cancer treatment. And yeah, absolutely. Diet is the most important place to start.
Yeah, it absolutely is. Now, that's not to say, that there aren't going to be dogs that eat a fabulous diet that don't get cancer. I mean, these are the things that we just don't know in the world, everything that causes, right? I mean, it's so crazy. You know, it's like a ticking time bomb. You can just, we've had cancer in our family. I'm sure you've had cancer in your family. Everyone has been touched by cancer. And most people have had a pet that has had cancer. We've talked about this before. Why is it that chemo is just not, I mean, it's so expensive, it's so hard on the dogs, but why is that just not a great option for pets?
Yeah, I don't ever recommend it. I mean, I always respect people's choices. So if people do choose to go down that road, I will still support them, because doing all the other supportive things like the diet, ozone, mistletoe, these other treatments I do can still help support the pet through the chemo. But it is so, it's so hard on the body. It just, it destroys the body's natural healing ability. And what I have seen time after time after time is pets get chemo, and the philosophy is, you know, you will get some short-term results. So the oncologist will say, look, we shrunk that tumor. We're good. We've had results. Here's your bill for $8,000. Well, 2 or 3 months later, it's going to come back almost always. I've never seen a case that where chemo has completely resolved cancer. It always comes back, and it comes back with a vengeance, because the cancer cells that survived the treatment are tougher, and we've completely wiped out the body's healing ability, because there's no support. You know, the pets that go into a conventional oncologist and get chemo and or radiation and or surgery, they're not even talking to them about helping, you know, providing better nutrition or helping the body be healthier. They're only targeting the cancer. And I look at, okay, what's going on underneath all this? What do we need to do to support the pet and support the body's own natural healing ability? And that's not even addressed on the conventional side. And I do not see pets do well. And even if you look at the odds, so they'll go into the oncologist and they'll say, well, your pet may have a month to live if we do nothing. If we do chemo, we might give him another 3 or 4 months. And it's like, what? Like, it's a poor quality of life. It's very expensive. Like, what are you gaining? I can almost always, unless the pet's very, very, has very advanced disease when they come in to see me, I can almost always go months beyond the conventional prediction, at least. And, you know, sometimes years. I mean, every case is different. But yeah, I just don't see any benefit at all of doing chemo. I've seen a few cases where tumors that are in a location that they're, you know, they can't be removed, they're very painful, and we're just having trouble controlling the pain, that some localized radiation will sometimes help and help with the pain. And that's, you know, I'm always looking at my patient's quality of life. If we can irradiate that tumor, just really focus on the tumor and it shrinks it, it's probably still not going to be a long-term solution, but we can sometimes improve the pet's quality of life. And then by doing the holistic care, try to get on top of it. But yeah, I'm not an advocate of chemo at all.
So what, again, I think we've covered this in one of our podcasts, but I wanted to ask you again, when you do a blood test, what typically is going to alert you in that test that would say, this dog may have cancer somewhere started?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so there's not specific things, but things that it might indicate inflammation. So a high white blood cell count, especially if you have one fraction of the white blood cell spectrum elevated, like lymphocytes, if you have a high lymphocyte count, that could indicate lymphoma. Calcium is something that will go up with some types of tumors. Anal sac tumors are notorious for raising the calcium. There's a hormone that seems to be released from these tumors that affects calcium metabolism. There are also some specialized tests that can be run that look for specific inflammatory markers, the thymidine kinase, C-reactive protein, and vitamin D are three indicators that the pet may be at risk. So that could be something you could do on an apparently healthy pet to assess their cancer risk based on, is the body inflamed? So you do that test, and if these markers are high, say, okay, if the body's inflamed, we want to reduce that inflammation. We could even have early stages of cancer somewhere. It just hasn't shown up yet. So I think that's a great test, a great screening test, especially as pups get older. Do that once a year along with, you know, standard blood work and look for these inflammatory markers, because I think that can be a big tip off, because the standard blood work doesn't have a lot of, it has, you know, like I said, a few indicators, but nothing that says, oh, that's, you know, probably cancer. If you had a tumor in the liver or in the kidneys, you know, then you would see those organ values would go up, but you don't know if it's a tumor or what is causing it. You would need to do other testing to determine that.
Okay. So along with your CBC, your complete blood count or panel, what other tests do you need to ask for this? And maybe you're the only one that does it, but what other tests do we need to ask for to do these preventative cancer sort of research blood work?
Yep. So this is a completely separate lab. It's a Veterinary Diagnostic Institute, and they have put these specific screens together. And anybody can go on their website and look at the tests they offer and what they test for. But it is a separate lab. So, I mean, any veterinarian can do this test. They just need to set up an account with this particular lab. But these aren't things that are typically done by your standard lab. And not only does VDI run these tests, they have developed, through their research, they've developed an algorithm that puts these three things together. So the thymidine kinase, the C-reactive protein, and the vitamin D, and takes these levels and puts them together. And then they give you an assessment of your pet's cancer risk. And it is in both dogs and cats. The actual tests that they run, there's a different enzyme that they check in cats as opposed to dogs, but it's the same principle. And we're looking for inflammation. They put this together and they actually give you like a number. They quantify this and they actually give you a number. This is your pet's cancer risk. So then we say, okay, we're inflamed. Let's do some things. If the dog is on a kibble diet or getting things that maybe could be causing inflammation or just got vaccinated or something like that, then we make these changes. Then a few months down the road, we go back and we can we can retest. We can test these markers. Okay, how are we doing? And even if we're treating a cancer patient, we can actually use this to say, you know, if we run this test when we first start treating, see where these inflammatory markers are, then as we go through the treatment, we can say it's another indicator of how are we doing with the treatment. You know, are we reducing inflammation? It's not 100%, but it is a way to indicate, you know, how are we doing, especially when we have internal type, you know, tumors. We have a tumor on the spleen or something like that. The only way to really go in and look at it is do an ultrasound. But that's still, so you can look at that tumor, but that still doesn't tell us, are we eliminating in the inflammation in the body? Because all disease is based in inflammation, and that's the key indicator. So I think it's a great monitoring tool that we can use during treatment. I think healthy dogs, it would be a great thing to be running, because you don't know, and you don't know what your pet's exposed to. You know, there's pesticides. There's so much stuff in our environment. We just live in a toxic world, and you can't get away from it all. But you can run this on pets and get some idea. Okay, I need to start looking. I need to find out why are my pet inflammatory markers so high, and start to make some changes.
So, what are the top things that cause inflammation in pets?
Well, I'll go back to diet, because that is number one. Feeding an inflammatory diet. An inflammatory diet is going to be a diet that's high in carbohydrates, because those spike the glucose, which spike insulin. And this just leads to inflammation in the body. A chronically elevated insulin will contribute to the formation of inflammation in the body. It is not a natural state. And in people, and they've even found that, like, heart disease, the plaques that people get on their arteries, the plaques are made out of cholesterol, but the cholesterol is there to help heal the injured arteries. These arteries are getting they're getting inflamed because of a poor diet, usually. And it's more the carbs that are causing the inflammation. It's not due to fat and all these other things we've been told. It's more due to the carbs in the diet and this chronically elevated glucose and chronically elevated insulin that causes this inflammation in the arteries. And the cholesterol is actually a good thing. It's a healing mechanism in the body. It just shows up because it's like, it's trying to resolve this inflammation and helping to heal these damaged arteries, but eventually, you know, it builds up and causes blockage. But it's not that the cholesterol is a bad thing. You got to go back a step before that. And what's causing the inflammation. So in pets, very first thing is diet. And go back to, you know, the kibble. You take, you know, carbohydrates, so either grains, and I don't think the grain-frees are any better, because they have, you know, the lentils and the peas and the beans and all that stuff. And then that's so overly processed at these high temperatures. It's so inflammatory in the body, and that it's spiking the glucose, which spikes the insulin, and this contributes to inflammation. And then you put on top of that things like vaccinations that overstimulate the immune system. So you have inflammation from the diet, and then you have these vaccines that are disrupting the normal function of the immune system. They're overstimulating the immune system. So then you have an immune system that's not responding appropriately. And what do you end up with? Autoimmune disease? Huge thing. I mean, autoimmune disease has gone, like, off the charts. And this is why. You know, this inflamed body, a disrupted immune system, the body doesn't know what to do. I mean, how to react properly. It doesn't know what's, you know, an appropriate response anymore, because all of these natural mechanisms have just been so disrupted. And then you put on top of that, you know, if you're doing heartworm, flea and tick, medications, you know, say the dog that gets inflamed and they have itchy skin and then they're on multiple courses of antibiotics and or steroids or Epoquil, all these things. And you just get this snowballing effect on the body.
So when you were in vet school, Dr. Jasek, did they talk about this issue of inflammation that you're relaying to the listeners today?
No, I would say not specifically. I mean, it's recognized in certain things like joint disease. You know, you have, you know, a dog that's limping that has arthritis. Okay, that's a form of inflammation. But as far as looking at it in terms of, okay, this is what leads to cancer and autoimmune disease, this is where we need to be addressing, you know, we need to be addressing inflammation in the body. Conventional medicine tends to treat the symptoms when they're further on down the road. We don't look at the cause. I dig into the history and say, okay, what has been going on in this pet's history that's maybe contributed to the current symptoms we're seeing? And, you know, as we were talking about chemo, conventional cancer therapy, they see a tumor, they just go after the tumor. That's the tip of the iceberg. This is a systemic condition, and we have to look at the whole body, the whole history, what's going on and what led up to this so we can eliminate the things that might be causing it and get the body healthier. Conventional medicine, it treats the symptoms that, you know, that are right in front of you. And it's just symptomatic. It's not really about curing or resolving anything. You're just treating what symptoms in front of you is in front of you, but not looking at what's underneath and what's maybe been causing that, and what type of changes do we need to make, you know, to the pet. I saw a kitty yesterday. It wasn't a cancer patient. It was a kitty with chronic nasal congestion, and it came out of the rescue, and it had every test like possible. They've done all these tests. They've done nasal biopsies and all of this stuff, and many, many, many courses of antibiotics. And this congestion keeps recurring. The guardian said that every couple of weeks the cat runs a fever, and they've done all this stuff. And so, well, what do I look at? I look at the diet. Cats eating kibble. So the first thing you need to do is get the cat off the kibble. Again, I'm going back to the inflammation. Like, why, if it was a bacterial condition, all of these antibiotics would have been working. I mean, I'm talking months and months of antibiotics. It's not working, you know? So what else is going on here? So, well, first of all, we need to eliminate anything that might be inflammatory. Okay, we're eating a kibble diet. Plus some other, there was like some other canned foods, but all commercial, all with ingredients that I would consider inflammatory. So that is the first thing that we need to do, is get the cat on a raw diet, ideally. And we'll see if she does that. The cat eats it. Otherwise, a young, healthy cat, it just has this chronic upper respiratory stuff going on, which we see a lot in cats. Cats are obligate carnivores. They are meant to eat a meat-based diet. You put them on a kibble and you're just setting them up for some sort of inflammatory disease. And, you know, plus in this case, cat came out of the shelter, so it was exposed to a lot of stuff. But that's a great example, I think, of the difference, because I can guarantee you nobody else, this cat has been to the specialty clinics. It's had, honestly, every test possibly run, and nobody knows what to do. She's reached dead end after dead end after dead end, and not a single veterinarian ever mentioned to her, maybe we need to look at the diet, you know? So that's where, it's always where I start, because we're giving things that are inflammatory And if we have chronic disease and we're not addressing the diet, honestly, you're beating your head against the wall trying to treat symptomatically and spending thousands of dollars on diagnostic tests unnecessarily, when maybe if we just reduced the things that are causing inflammation in the first place, maybe we could resolve the condition and not, or at least help it enough to where it's manageable and not have to spend all this extra money just to reach more dead ends.
Well, you know, and I mean, I can't tell you how many dogs and cats that we have seen here at Raw Dog Food and Company that come over and they've got all of these issues that you're talking about, and they put them on a raw diet and they either totally resolve or drastically are reduced. And it's amazing. I've said this on many podcasts where we've had vets that have actually told the guardians or pet parents, you need to put this animal down. You know, we've done everything we can and it's just not going to resolve. And it's, you know, bad litter or whatever it is. And they've put their pets on a raw diet, pulled out all the inflammation, and the dog heals. It blows my mind. And it really is very frightening to me that we have so many health professionals in the market giving, I don't know if I want to say bad advice, but they're just not, that really bothers me. It's like, if you don't know the basis, the basic diet is first, then what do you know? I just, you know, people will text me or email me and they will say, well, my vet once says my dog needs grains. What do you think I should do? And I said, get a different vet, because if your vet, if your vet doesn't know how to treat a carnivore, then that really is concerning. So yes, that's very frightening. And I think that is one of the big things that we've got to get through to our pet parents is inflammation, right? Inflammation, mm-hmm. inflammation. And if you don't want to set your dog up for cancer, then, you know, take that out of their diet. And people will say, well, my dog loves it. Okay. Well, I don't know. You know, I've said it a million times. I know a lot of people that love crack, that love cocaine, but you wouldn't just sit there and give it to them.
Right, exactly. And to that point, I think that pets do get, especially cats, will get addicted to carbs.
Oh, yeah.
And they crave it. They crave it because you're feeding this. You know, the body gets in this cycle where the blood glucose goes way up and then it crashes. And then they want to, you know, it's like eating comfort food. You know, we do that, you know, humans sometimes too. You got your favorite little snack that may not be the best for you, but man, it sure feels good when you eat it, you know. And it's because of the effects it's having on your body's metabolism, but they don't last. And when those effects go away, it's like you want another hit. It's like it is. It's the same as being addicted to a drug. And I think pets do get addicted to it. And, you know, look on down the road. You know, your pet loves to eat kibble. You don't want to look at those sad eyes. Do you want to be treating cancer in a couple of years? I mean, this is what we're preventing. You know, I'm promoting this way of feeding because it's healthiest for pets, not because, I mean, I'm not making any money selling raw food, you know. I just know that it's healthier for pets. Actually, this is going to keep pets out of my office, you know. I'd rather see pets, you know, hear about how well they're doing. I mean, nothing makes me happier than when I get an email from a client that tells me how well their pet is doing, how much energy they have, and they're feeling so good and they're playing. And I mean, there's no money amount of money in the world for me that it could be a substitute for that. You know, I mean, we all have bills to pay and all that stuff, but you know what I mean? Like that's the ultimate gratification for me right there. That's why I'm doing this. And I think unfortunately, the rest of the profession is, this is intentional. You know, it's, there's a design in medicine to sell pharmaceuticals and sell prescription diets. You know, I mean, I don't want to sound like a conspiracy theorist here, but this is the reality. There's big corporations that are controlling medicine, including how veterinarians are trained. And they're in the business of selling medications and selling prescription foods. And there's way more money in sickness than there is in health. There's not as much money. Pharmaceutical companies aren't going to be making much money. If their true aim is to get patients healthier, they come off the drugs, there goes all their profits. It's much more lucrative to keep pets and people sick. And I know that sounds terrible, but I really believe that if there was a true intention in the powers that be that really, really run the medical industries to promote health, then medical professionals would be trained in nutrition first and foremost. And then we use pharmaceuticals and other things here and there as needed, but not as a first line. But there's too much money in selling drugs and vaccines. Vaccines are they're horribly, horribly overused in pets. And I think that's a big cause of a lot of our inflammatory disease. And with the corporatization of veterinary medicine, so many more clinics are now owned by these corporations like your VCAs and Blue Pearl. I don't think Blue Pearl's in this area than other parts of the country, but those companies are owned by even bigger corporations, and they're looking at the bottom line. The markup on giving vaccines is huge, like 1,000% or something. It's the most lucrative thing that veterinarians can do as far as profit margin. That, you know, and the techs can even do them. The vet doesn't even have to use their time. So pumping animals full, 5-6 different vaccines when they come in, they're making a mint. And somebody in the office looking at the bottom line saying, yeah, let's push those vaccines. And then they give the veterinarians instructions and quotas and all the stuff of how much they need to be earning and how many patients they need to see a day. And, you know, that's unfortunately where veterinary medicine is going. It's totally based on money and profit margin. And it's so sad because our pets are getting sicker and sicker and sicker. And this is why, you know, I appreciate this opportunity to get on and get the word out and hopefully help people realize some of what's going on and what they can do differently and the importance of advocating for their own pets. People need to speak up. If something doesn't seem right or feel right, then don't do it. Challenge your veterinarians, ask questions. You know, you know, most people know what's right for their pet. If something doesn't feel right, like you said, go find another vet. There's plenty of them out there.
You know what? You have got to, and maybe you have, but I'm going to tape this. I was put on hold the other day. I was trying to find a customer. Okay. And so I called the number that they left, and this particular customer obviously worked at Bamfield. So they put me on hold, and the hold message just sent shudders up my spine. What they are pushing, just exactly what you were talking about, the way that they market on those on hold messages is so frightening to me. And I hope that I can call back again and get somebody to put me on hold so that I can tape it and we can talk about it on the podcast. Oh my gosh. Just, you know, putting the fear in parents about heartworm and vaccines and all this kind of stuff. You need to get in here to get this done. You know, I was just shocked because obviously I don't go to Bamfield, but I could not believe what I was hearing on the on hold message. So if you guys get a chance that are listening to me, just call Banfield and make up a question. Hopefully they'll put you on hold and you can hear what I'm talking about. But I will try to get that taped and we can talk about it, but just crazy, crazy, the stuff that they were pushing.
Yeah.
But we'll talk about that on another podcast. Before we go, I want to tell our listeners about an article that just came out. And I think you're going to really love this article. It's on foodsafetynews.com. Foodsafetynews.com. And the article is titled, Survey Finds Infection Through Raw Pet Food is Rare. And this came out September 10th, so 2 days ago. The survey was conducted by the veterinary medicine faculty at the University of Helsinki in Finland. Now, this is the group that Dr. Jacek, as you know, is doing a lot of studying and working on raw pet food and how it works in the pet's body. So they're doing a lot of testing and they've had to do it with their own funds because nobody is funding these tests. But
right.
Here's what they found out, that the reports of out breaks of infections with salmonella, all these different kind of things was very, very low. And they, let me see if I can find some. In one study, let's see, what did they say? Basically, what they're saying is this, the correlation of infection related to children. So they said in a total, 99.6% of households feeding their pets a raw food did not report any pathogens being transmitted from the food to humans. And the people that they surveyed had been feeding raw to their pets. They had a range from several weeks to 65 years. Now, there are people that have been feeding their raw diet for 65 years.
Wow.
This is the first report that's come out in favor or that's come out that has said, look, we've done this survey and we're not finding these problems. But where they did have some sickness, okay, they said, look, there's a question of whether the pathogens that these certain households might have picked up could have been transmitted by children from playing outdoors, whether they had, you know, these infections coming from daycare centers or other public spaces. And they couldn't really say whether pet food had been the source of the infection. But this is what really caught my attention about this article, that this information, this study was published in the Veterinary Record Journal. And it said that it found that foodborne pathogens are rarely transmitted to humans through raw pet food. And this right here is what vets will tell the pet parents when they are in the clinic and they say, ah, I really don't recommend raw pet food. Why? Well, because of the pathogens that can be transmitted to you and your kiddos in your home. And what makes me angry is that they already know, if they're reading their journals, that this is a very, very rare occurrence. So I'm just blown away. You guys, you can read it yourself, foodsafetynews.com. Again, the title of the article is Survey Finds Infection Through Raw Pet Food is Rare. Rare.
Right. Those claims are, I mean, they're completely unfounded. You know, people, I think a lot of times, you know, just take the word, you know, their veterinarian because they trust them. But if you were to ask them, where is that information coming from? There is no basis for it. There's no research study that shows that people get sick or pets get sick from from eating raw food. I thought, and this is really frightening to me, and I actually had been wondering about this, and then I saw this article where they actually tested dry pet foods for glyphosate, which is what's in Roundup. So this is a known carcinogen, and they're testing it. They're actually testing it in dry foods. So why is it that raw food that's good, healthy, wholesome food is always incriminated, and these foods that are now being tested to contain a known carcinogen, they're not taking them off of those. They don't even question the diet. Like, they don't even look at it. If a dog's on a dry food, you know, they don't even look at it. And now we have this article that shows that there's known, I mean, chemicals known to show cancer, and that just gets ignored. Like, how is that possible? Like, I honestly don't get it. And hopefully with more information, like the article that, you know, that you found, as that comes out, you know, maybe that'll help. But, you know, unfortunately, what I see from other professionals is if they don't want to take that on, if they don't want to change their paradigm and how they view raw feeding, they will find a way to debunk it somehow or discredit it or something. I mean, that's what typically happens. But it is really great that somebody's finally, you know, actually looking at that. And there's some, you know, concrete information coming out that raw food is safe.
Yeah, I'm just like, you know, again, what is in it that could be harming your carnivore? Here is the word, carnivore. Meat, bone, organs, fat, tripe, a few veggies. I mean, come on. What is in there?
Right.
It's not like we're sneaking this in there and sneaking that in there. We're not, you know, putting these weird things in the food. And so I just, again, it is owning this business, running this business, feeding raw for 20 years, talking to people. I really do see why big corporations hire these marketing teams. And because there is a natural way that human beings think. And mm-hmm. And they just play into that. And they say, look, people want a quick fix. They don't want something that's going to have to require a lot of thinking. They like to trust certain things. You know, we like to trust pretty pictures and pretty packaging. So they play into that. And it is so backwards. It is so backwards, but this is the way that we think. This is the way that we believe. And mm-hmm. We line up for that poison. We say, I'm lining up and I'm going to give you my money to poison me. Go right ahead because I trust you. I mean, it's just... Yeah.
People are duped. They're duped by marketing and they don't even realize it. Our culture, and I don't mean this offensively, but a lot of our culture is dumbed down by the marketing. And it's all intentional. These companies spend millions and millions and millions to market their food, or, you know, whether it's pet food or breakfast cereal or whatever it is you're buying. It's like you just said, they know how people think and they know how to sell, and they don't have to put out a good product. They have to market it well. And that's what they focus on is the marketing. They put out a really cheap, crappy product that costs them pennies to produce. And then they know how to market it. They know how to play on people's emotions, especially with pets. They play on the emotions, just like your recording you listen to at Banfield. I can guarantee you, Banfield's owned by Mars. They're owned by this huge corporation. And whatever's on that recording is not there by accident. That is designed to sell. And that it's designed in a very, very particular way, and it's probably designed around fear. You don't do these things, your pet's going to get sick. And because people feel afraid and guilty, so much when it comes to their pets because they want to figure out the care. And they know that they play on those emotions of fear and guilt, they will sell. And that it's all designed to do that. They don't want people thinking for themselves or asking questions. They just want people to buy into the marketing. And it's all intentional. And it is quite sad that our culture is literally dumbed down to the point that people don't question. They're just like, oh my gosh, I got to get my pet on this heartworm medication or he's going to get heartworm and die. Like, okay, well, in December in Colorado, do you really think there's any mosquitoes around? You know, like just people just are trained, really are trained to not think. They're just trained to buy. It's really quite sad.
It is quite sad. So all of you fabulous, wonderful pet parents who are listening to this podcast, you can reach out and schedule a phone consultation with Dr. Judy Jasek. Now, I don't make any money off of Dr. Jasek's me sending you over there. She doesn't make any money off of raw dog food. We are working together because these two things have to come together, okay? Diet has to come together, and you have to have a vet who will look at your pet in its totality and to help you navigate through this maze of bad health information. Seriously. I mean, it's bad health information. If you live outside of the Denver area, you can contact Dr. Judy Jasek, J-A-S-E-K. Her website is drjudyholisticvet.com. If you can't spell holistic, you can go to cancer-vet.com and get to that much easier. So you can schedule a phone consultation. She will talk to you. She will look at your vet records. If you're here in Denver, schedule a time to go see her. I love this test that you're talking about with VDI, Vet Diagnostic Institute, where we can look at the inflammatory markers. As a matter of fact, I'm probably going to schedule a time to bring Asta over there. And so we can see where the pet is inflamed and we can begin to treat that. Remember, inflammation is the precursor, right? Is sort of the fuel that leads to cancer. So we got to get that inflammation down. That's why we say friends don't let friends feed kibble. If you'd like to get your pet started on a raw dog food diet, please go to my website, Raw Dog Food and A&D Co. and take a look at my feeding chart and facts page. We are here to help. All right, Dr. Jasek, thanks so much. Great. Have a great week. Thank you for all you do in helping our pets be as healthy as possible. We love it.
Yep. Thank you. Thank you, Dee Dee.
Oh, snap.
Find out how you can start your dog on the road to health and longevity. Go to rawdogfoodandcompany.com, where friends don't let friends feed kibble, and where your pet's health is our business.